turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big money at Menards.
Don't sweat the technique.
Informed opinion. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Meanwhile, Jacksonville can set their sights likely on Kansas City. Here we go for the win. Got it, but there's a flag down. There's a flag down as everybody's running out onto the field, but there's a penalty marker. And they call it on the defense.
Unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
Al Michaels just couldn't contain his excitement. One of the greatest come-from-behind victories in playoff history, not the one of. And Al Michaels like calling it like it's a fourth down field goal in the third quarter in a three-possession game. The excitement for Al Michaels just was not there when Jacksonville had their magical moment.
Listen. I understand that there's some people that sit with the microphone off that don't listen to the broadcast. I get it, and I'm one of those people who, if it's a really boring game, maybe I'll just have it on in the background. It's the playoffs, man. Like, honestly, how in the hell do you go from... Mike Tirico put on a clinic last night of how a playoff game is supposed to be called. Freaking Greg Olsen put on a clinic on how you're supposed to do play-by-play analysis. That was the most boring, bland play-by-play I have ever heard in my entire life. And I understand that we can go ahead and say, oh, Tony Dungy didn't do a good job. Well, you know what? Al Michaels didn't give him anything to work with either. It's like a two-man street on this one.
I've always thought that Dungy was not a very good analyst.
Oh, he's terrible.
He's just really dull. I prefer him a lot more in studio. I think he does a pretty good job in the studio. I don't like him in the broadcast. Al Michaels, I love Al Michaels. I still think Al Michaels is good. I've watched a lot of the Thursday night stuff this year, and I think Al Michaels has been fine. I think in that moment, he was so concerned that the flag was going to negate the game winner that he didn't want to go over the top on a sell job for a game winner because it sounded like he thought the flag was on Jacksonville. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
My big thing is I think that he's seen so many bad games this year on Thursday night football, he got clocked out. He was
There's no way that you can get clocked. If that is the case, then he needs to hang him up. Because if you're getting clocked out over a wild card game with this dramatic of a finish, one of the greatest comebacks in playoff history, then it's time to hang him up.
I mean, to be fair, he kept it in his excitement like everyone else in Los Angeles was ready to burn down that city when Brandon Staley walked in the building. So, I mean, I got to give him credit there. I mean, honestly, Brandon Staley needs to probably call up Cliff Kingsbury for that one-man flight over to the likes of Thailand.
How much do you put that on Brandon Staley? Because I look back, because Brandon Staley is notorious for making questionable decisions, his modern style of going for it fourth and two at his 25-yard line in the second quarter in a game that he's up by 10. Like, a lot of weird things that he has done. I look at that second half and probably should have told Lombardi, hey, why don't we run the football a little bit more? I get that. I don't look at that second half as one of the worst games that Staley's ever managed.
90%.
That said, I would fire him.
90%. I blame him 90%.
Where do you think he went wrong?
Number one, he's the defensive play caller. Defensive adjustments were not made at all.
Why would you make adjustments defensively at the half whenever you're owning Jacksonville?
Because of eventually you start seeing Jacksonville own you, and then you didn't make any adjustments. So you allow guys like Marvin Jones, Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram, and Zay Jones, all of which are very B-minus to C-plus average receivers, kick your butt for the entire fourth quarter. That's the entire thing that I look at. Not only that, I give about 5% of blame to Joe Lombardi, because if you do have a good running back in the red zone in Austin Eckler, who's so dynamic, so underutilized in this offense.
What did he have, like 13 cut? 13 carries? 15 carries?
He
had 13. He had 13
carries. 13 carries. Even worse. And you saw what he did inside the 20 after that first interception. But I also give 5% of blame to Justin Herbert, because if Justin Herbert is supposed to be at that same level as Joe Burrow, as Josh Allen, as Patrick Mahomes, and he did it. He only walked away with 3 points, but I will say the least amount of blame goes to Justin Herbert. I will say that some of the blame needs to go to Joe Lombardi. He absolutely is done. He is absolutely out of here. But at the same time, you fail. You have 5 turnovers in the first half. You have 3 easy interceptions. The best receiver for Jacksonville was freaking Asante Samuel Jr. for the entire first half, and you lose a football game, and it's your side of the football. That's the whole rule that I always have. If your side of the football, offense or defense, is absolutely dog crap, you're the problem. Well, and that's why I think you gotta be fired.
The offense was, too.
Oh, I'm not
disagreeing. The offense was, too.
But the entire first half, they capitalized defensively, and they were able to put up points. That was the big deal. They had the fumble recovery. They scored a touchdown. They had the interception. They scored a touchdown. They had another interception. They scored a touchdown. So they were able to capitalize offensively off of it, and the defense made enough critical stops because of it. But at the same time, Brandon Staley's not on the field. Two of those two interceptions were literally just like, hey, I'm Trevor Lawrence. Oh, sunshine. Oh, rainy day right there to Asante Samuel Jr. basically being his daddy, 2.0. That's the way that I looked at it. So I'm not giving credit to Brandon Staley for calling a great defensive play.
No. I'm with you there. I'm not giving him credit. I think that if we look over the course of his career, he's done a lot of crazy things, a lot of things that you're like, why is this guy a head coach in the NFL? Second half, I'm not going to argue that he didn't have a good scheme, didn't make adjustments, things like that. He should have been in Lombardi's ear. How about we run the ball a little bit more? How about we get Austin Eckler, who's a very good football player, more than 13 carries in this game, especially when we're up by so much. So I think there was a lot of things where they went wrong. Now, in terms of firing Staley, I'm in favor of firing Staley, but if you're the Chargers, you have to know you're getting Sean Payton.
Well, that's
you have
thing.
To play the back channels. You have to know that if I fire Staley, I'm getting Sean Payton. Because if you don't, if you're Garrett, like if you don't know, if there's any uncertainty at all, I think you have to bring Brandon Staley back. Well, the only way you move on is if you know you have Sean Payton in the fold.
The only thing that I will say is that Dean Spanos is one of the cheapest owners when it comes to front office and head coaching searches. Every single year, he has an opportunity to bring in the hottest name. Nobody wants to go there because they don't want to take the price of what they're going to pay. You get a cheap option like Staley, who comes from the Sean McVay coaching background. Sean McVay basically took over as Bill Belichick 2.0 for the 2020 season. You look at all the names that have gotten hired because of working underneath him. I love the fact that you are not going to be aggressive, but at the same time, this is a team that has a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal that also spent money in free agency like they always do. They upgraded the pass rush with Khalil Mack. They upgraded by bringing in J.C. Jackson, who did get hurt. They do have great draft capital. They also have a plethora of talent that's either already paid up long-term or is about to get paid, or they're going to be at the end of their contract to where you'll free up salary cap space. The only team in the NFL right now, that could give up a first-round pick and not miss a beat if it was Sean Payton, is Los Angeles Chargers. Because a better coach wins that game. And this is why coaching matters in the NFL. Doug Peterson was ran out of town by Philadelphia. In one offseason with B-minus C-plus receivers, a very average offensive line, and the 27th-ranked defense is playing in the divisional round, and he got Trevor Lawrence looking like a top-10 pick.
Yeah. See, that's one theme that I heard all weekend long on Twitter was like, oh, look, Texans, look how important coaching is. Look how important coaching. Well, no crap, coaching matters. Like, in what world have we been living in that coaching has not mattered in football? Like, it's just all of a sudden it's new. Like, seeing this over the weekend kind of annoyed me, if I'm being completely honest. Oh, coaching matters. Well, yeah, coaching matters. You know what else matters? Quarterback play. I think if you look at this weekend and go around the NFL, quarterback play matters. If you want to start in that Jacksonville game, Jacksonville was down by 20 points in the first half because of poor quarterback play, and then they came from behind to win because of good quarterback play. I think you can look across the entire league in this week of the playoffs and look how quarterback play matters a ton as well. So it's just stating the obvious. Coaching matters, yeah. Coaching does matter. So does quarterback play. Quarterback play matters too. In fact, if I had to pick between the two, quarterback play or a head coach, I want the quarterback, quite frankly. That's the thing that matters the most to me.
Well, it was the tale of true Trevors, if we're being completely real here.
Sure,
if
you go but ahead bad and, Trevor, good Trevor.
Good Trevor. But at the same time, it is so much easier to replace a head coach than it is a franchise quarterback. And that's why all the time you see teams weigh in on the quarterback more than they do on the head coach. Because a head coach can come in and work with the quarterback. He can either elevate the play or decline the play, and you can send him out the door packing. But you watch teams every single year try and land a quarterback. They try and go ahead and get their first-round guy. The New York Jets have been looking for a franchise quarterback since the days of Joe Namath, who's their best player. Sid Luckman still is the leader in passing yards for the Chicago Bears. They've never
Don't sleep on Chad Pennington. He's pretty good.
They have never had a 4,000-yard passer in the history of the NFL, the Chicago Bears. Like, that's saying something.
That's why they should draft Bryce Young.
Okay. You're adorable. Listen, my main point is, I understand where you're coming from when it comes to head coaching searches, because coaching does matter.
Absolutely,
but
it matters
you
a ton.
But you need the quarterback. There's not another Trevor Lawrence out there. There's not a lot of Justin Herberts out there. There's not a lot of Josh Allen. There's not a lot of Patrick Mahomes. There's not a lot of these guys that you can go ahead and just say, oh, they're difference makers. Because, oh, go ahead. Watch what happened when you had Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins for most of the season.
Right. Like I was blown away by the amount of tweets I saw from like blue check marks in the city saying, oh, look, guys, coaching matters. Like, is that an innovative thought that coaching suddenly matters now and it didn't previously? Like, why didn't coaching matter when you hired Lovie Smith? Because he won the press conference, which was a very popular thing to say whenever, oh, he won the press conference. We feel good about football in Texas, in Houston. Or whenever you hired David Culley. Like, coaching always matters, and it matters a lot in the NFL. I think if you looked at the three main professional sports, the NFL is where you win games the most with very good coaching. I think NBA second, Major League Baseball is obviously third. In fact, Major League Baseball, I think it's more important the things that you're doing in the clubhouse than out on the field. But if you look across the NFL forever, that coaching has always mattered. So like the tweets of, hey guys, look at the wild card round. This is why coaching matters in the NFL. Cool. Like the sun's gonna rise tomorrow too. That's not any sort of innovative thought. It's not some sort of like groundbreaking something. Like it's not any sort of groundbreaking idea that you need a good head coach to win in the NFL. You've always needed a good head coach to win in the NFL. Can you have talent sometimes that overcomes poor coaching? Absolutely you can. But the best coaches are the ones that get the most of their team. The Doug Peterson example is a great one. Because you look at Doug Peterson with Philadelphia, the dude made Carson Wentz look like an MVP. He won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles.
Nick Foles.
Like, why? So, like, if we're going to look at Nick Caserio, and I sometimes, like, advocate a little bit more for Nick Caserio because I don't know how involved he was in the whole Lovie Smith hire. But, like, why does coaching matter now with this coaching search for the Texans? But it did not matter last year when you hired Lovie Smith over Doug Peterson or Brian Daboll.
The one thing that I absolutely hate is the win the press conference mantra.
Oh, I can't stand it.
Nick Sirianni looked like a deer in headlights when he was introduced by the Philadelphia Eagles. He's probably going to be up for coach of the year. He shouldn't win it, but he's going to be up for coach of the year. Dan Campbell talks about biting ankles and kneecaps coming up, and he has the Detroit Lions looking like a team on the rise in the NFC. Don't sell me for one second that the press conference is where you win football games. It's the dumbest argument out there. Brandon Staley says literally everything right in press conferences every single week. He knows the analytics. He knows how to go ahead and coach defenses. He knows certain situations on the field. This is where we punt. This is where we go for it on fourth down. The analytics, the numbers, the numbers, the numbers, the numbers. Here's one number. You lost in the playoffs this past year, and you didn't make the playoffs last year because your analytic BS got in your own way. So I'm sorry. Don't tell me that you can win in the press conference when I see what's on the field. Doug Peterson wins on the field. Nick Sirianni wins on the field. Brian Daboll, who got passed up being roommates with Tom Telesco and could have had a quarterback like Justin Herbert, is playing in the divisional round of the playoffs with Daniel Jones as his quarterback and XYZ receiver here as his number one option. Don't tell me for one second that the press conference is where you win the locker room.
The Texans are like illusionists. We're just like, hey, look over here, we're winning press conferences with very bad head coaches. Hey, look over here, we're going to leak these uniform changes and how great everything is. But don't look over here whenever we've won seven games in the last 2 years and we're the worst franchise in the NFL. I don't care what they're wearing. Like, I really don't. Like, this whole, like, does it fire up the fan base? Cool. Does it sell merchandise? Cool. But all I care about is how you're playing. Like, you could go out wearing what I'm wearing on Sundays as long as you're winning football games. Like, that's how the Texans are operating right now. Look at all the cool things that we're doing. Don't watch us on the field. Who wants to watch us play football? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Speaking of how important coaching is, who do you like in this coaching candidate pool for the Houston Texans right now? How would you rank them? And do you think, because I still see people saying the Texans are going to hire Jerod Mayo. They're still going to go after Nick Caley from New England. That Josh McCown is going to be a last-minute interview and hire. Do you think the Texans' next head coach comes from this current pool? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we'll get into our who we like from this coaching carousel. in a bit. Also, Sean Payton went on with Colin Cowherd. We'll get to this in a little bit as well, and was talking openly about the Houston Texans job, so one of the candidates on the list. What do you think, though, from the whole idea that the Texans still entertaining other names? There were some rumors about Nick Caley, who I've never even heard that name, to be honest with you.
Sounds like a great guy.
He's with the Patriots. I think he's a wide receivers coach.
Tight end coach, I'm pretty sure.
Tight ends coach, even better. He probably coached Aaron Hernandez. There's a lot of people, though, that think that he should have been calling plays this year for New England, which not a surprise. He's also been rumored to be the New York Jets. Like, he's on their list for offensive coordinator. Go back and look at this. I think that Nick Caserio had an agreement with Bill Belichick. Nick Caserio has never interviewed a Patriots assistant for the head coaching position of the Texans in now 3 years of having this job open. Not one. The only one that you could like kind of say would be Brian Flores, but I'm not going to count him as a Patriots assistant when he's been a head coach after being a Patriots assistant.
That would be like considering Brian Daboll just part of the Bill Belichickian tree.
Sure.
Whenever he leaves and goes to Buffalo and finds a way to be successful with Sean McDermott. I thought it was so funny because after the press conference last year when David Culley was fired, everyone was talking about who was the name that everyone was taking in on. And everyone was like, oh, we need a young, innovative, great mind, great work ethic. Oh, Jerod Mayo's coming to Houston.
I did deep dives on Mayo because I thought he'd be the next head coach of the Texans.
I thought for sure it was a done deal.
Same.
Like, locked up. And then you don't even see him get an interview. That was the most amazing
part. Or his best friend, Josh McDaniels.
I can't believe it.
Like, that's his best friend. He did an interview for the job. Like,
and
there's
his
something
brother's
there.
On the staff, too.
Yeah, there's something there. There's something there. Like, either it's Cal telling Caserio, we don't want to be Patriots South, because Cal has said we're not Patriots South behind a live microphone. So maybe Cal McNair told Caserio that. Maybe Caserio just doesn't want that to follow him. Maybe he had a handshake agreement with Bill Belichick. But he has never interviewed a Patriots assistant to be the head coach of the Texans in now 3 years in a row of the position being opening.
Well,
that's not coincidence.
I'm not going to lie. Anybody thinks for a second that Patriot way works outside of Foxborough is ridiculous.
Sure.
Go ahead and look at the likes of what you saw with Detroit a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we're going to fire Jim Caldwell after having a winning season because we have Bob Quinn as our GM. We're going to go out there. We're going to get pencil pusher Matt Patricia backwards hat, looking like a stud on the sidelines, have more knowledge inside the number two pencil, the Ticonderoga special than he does in the actual play calling. That franchise was set back so far that you saw Darius Slay, a very well-respected player in the NFL, go, dude, I'm out.
Yeah.
I don't even want to be here for the rebuild. I don't want to be here to play with this guy. I don't want to figure out who's going to be the next person to come in. 2 years later, Brad Holmes works with Jared Goff, Dan Campbell, biting kneecaps, stealing hearts, taking names, making it a superstar to go out there on freaking double caffeinated mumbo jumbo, finds a way to get wins. First winning season since the Jim Caldwell era. I mean, like, you don't work with the likes of Patriots South. So I understand where you're not coming with that. I will say if there was any assistant out there that I would have liked, it would have been Jerod Mayo. I think that he's very well respected. I think he's an up-and-comer in the sport. I love the way that he's able to call defensive plays. I love the way that he is the name that everyone relies on. And he has developed linebackers second to none, which in this defensive style, you probably need good front seven. You need a decent defensive backfield, but you really need to be able to develop a guy like Christian Harris. So I understand why maybe you go after that guy, but at the same time, you don't want to be Patriots South. And honestly, the last thing you want to do at this point is fire Nick Caserio and be stuck with Jerod Mayo, who doesn't fit your system anymore.
The Matt Patricia almost ran over me one time on his AV. In hindsight, I should have taken a charge.
I should have
taken a charge with the AV because I'd be a multimillionaire. I'd be a multimillionaire right now. I wouldn't be hanging out with Cole Thompson and Sean Mapes. As much as I like doing those things, I wouldn't do it if I had millions and millions of dollars.
You'd be hanging out with Cliff Kingsbury in Thailand right now.
I'm probably not Cliff's cup of tea. I don't think that Cliff and I would really vibe. Maybe we would. I don't know. Texans coaching candidate list right now. Benny Johnson, D'Amico Ryans, Kafka, Steichen, Avero, Brown, Gannon, Payton. Do you think the next head coach of the Texans comes from that list?
Yes, I do.
I do too. I'm not even sure there's going to be another person interviewed at this point.
Why would you?
I don't think that there's going to be.
Like, when you have that main... Now, Thomas Brown, the running backs coach for the Los Angeles Rams, is interviewing for the position as well.
So
you didn't mention him. So that was the only name that I thought you didn't mention. But outside of that, those are seven qualified candidates that you can pick from. And there's offensive-minded people, there's defensive-minded people, all of which had called plays at one point. And here's the main thing that I really love about this. You want your head coach to be running it like a CEO, and you want them to trust who they can bring in. there's names that are listed. Like, Jonathan Gannon is probably the first name that everyone wants to focus in on because of last season.
Gross.
The reason why I actually am okay with the hire is because of who he would hire as a staff. I know that he's been linked to guys like Frank Reich. I know that...
even worse.
Frank Reich knows how to develop quarterbacks. I don't want to hear it.
Jim Kelly up to? What? Like, you might as well just have him coach quarterbacks. Marv Levy doing these days?
I like that fit.
Bruce Smith coaching defensive line?
I also like that Ben Johnson has a good connection with the likes of Vic Fangio, who is one of the best defensive minds in the NFL. So I think that when you look at those kind of things, if you're able to find a coach who knows how to be the CEO mantra, bring in a good coaching staff with him, that's a step in the right direction. As much as I think the head coach matters, that coaching staff will be the reason why you're successful or not. Because part of the reason why you look at the team this past year, it wasn't only Lovie Smith, who was his offense coordinator. Look at the plays.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, at what point is running Rex Burkhead on a 3rd and 8 just overall drawn out and just BS?
Hey,
that's the way I look at it.
Don't sleep on sexy Rexy. Rex Burkhead does some good things. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Let's go out there now for Troy. Troy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Troy?
How you doing? Wanted to comment on the next coach I think the Texans should have. I think Mike Kafka will probably be a good option. Him and D'Amico Ryans will be my two top options. Mike Kafka, because he's coached already Patrick Mahomes. He's already showing this. He's already doing a really good job under Brian Daboll on Daniel Jones. I think he's shown that he can do a really good job with a quarterback offensive-wise, and I think he could put together a pretty good team also.
All right. Appreciate the call, Troy. Those are Troy's top two, D'Amico and Kafka. He likes those two. You think it's going to be an offensive guy? I know I've heard a bunch of reports saying that the Texans are looking for a little bit more of an offensive-oriented guy, even though everybody loves D'Amico.
I think it has to be an offensive guy. I honestly do. And the main reason why is because if you are going quarterback and you need to rebuild, you need to get an offensive guy in there. Look at the names who have been so successful with these up-and-coming quarterbacks. Doug Peterson, offensive guy. You also had Andy Reid, offensive guy. Zach Taylor, offensive guy. So if you're trying to go ahead and build the quarterback and start it in your image, you need an offensive guy. I'm not going to lie to you guys. After this past weekend, Mike Kafka moved up on my big
board. Don't let one game influence your decision.
It wasn't one game. It wasn't one game. But it's the fact that
you said after this weekend. Did they play more than once?
No, because he was number 3 on my big board. So he was number 3. Now he's up at number 2. That's the way I look at it. And it's not only because of the efficiency of Daniel Jones, but number 1, he also played quarterback in the NFL. That's a huge plus for anyone that's trying to elevate the quarterback play. And number 2, he worked underneath Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes. And that was the big thing. He was the quarterback's coach. He wasn't the offensive play caller. He was the quarterback's coach. So he knows how to develop quarterbacks. And now he is the offensive play caller in the likes of New York.
Are you,
which
how
is
much,
something that didn't happen
how
with
much,
Eric Bieniemy.
How much are you giving him credit for developing Pat Mahomes?
I'm not giving him credit. I'm saying that he's worked with Patrick Mahomes.
He worked with him. Sure. Right. So, sure. So was he part of the offensive brilliance behind Kansas City? Absolutely not.
Okay. That's like
I could have been the quarterback's coach there and Pat Mahomes would have had great success with Andy Reid.
That's like saying that Eric Bieniemy has a say in the play calling.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It's the opposite end of the spectrum. You're saying Bieniemy doesn't have a say in the play calling.
He doesn't have a say in the play calling.
I agree with that. But why? Because Andy Reid's the genius behind the offense, just like Andy Reid's the genius behind the offense with Mike Kafka as a quarterback.
And with no wide receivers, with a limited offensive line, they still finished 16th in scoring offense, and they still finished top 15 in passing yards and top 15
you're talking about
in
with the Giants.
Offense. Yeah.
Now, this year, yeah.
And it's with Daniel Jones, who was a turnover machine.
Congratulations. He barely cracked the top 50.
Hey,
the top 50%.
What did Houston crack?
They were terrible.
I say, what did Houston crack? 31?
We're barely
above the Chicago Bears.
But we're not comparing
barely
Kafka.
Above the Chicago Bears.
We're not comparing Kafka to Lovie Smith and Pep Hamilton. We're comparing him in relative to the rest of the coaching search that's out there, not to who the Texans were.
No, but if you're asking me right now, I believe offensive mind. I agree with you. Benny Johnson would be my prick. Benny Johnson would be my number 1 guy. That's the guy I want to go after. His development of Jared Goff, his ability to work with outside tight ends, his ability to extend plays, his ability to get receivers to be able to play at the par. You also had a very good run game with Jamal Williams in the red zone. You have a burly running back in Damian Pierce. That's the guy that I would go after. But if you're telling me right now who would be the next offensive mind, I go Mike Kafka. He's played the position in the NFL. He also has worked with multiple different quarterbacks, multiple different style of quarterbacks, and he also did do the play calling. That's a big deal for me, something that Eric Bieniemy has not done.
Well, I mean, Bieniemy, again, we're not comparing him to Bieniemy. 713-780-3776. Real quick before we hit the break, I want to pay this Sean Payton. Sean Payton was on with Colin Cowherd on FS1 today, and he was openly talking about the Houston Texans job. Here he is, Sean Payton, one of the coaching candidates for the Houston Texans.
Are you willing to consider that if
absolutely.
You, okay, you
Here's
would.
Why. And look, I think I know the ownership group not very well, but we practiced against the Texans in New Orleans four or five different times. So Cal McNair, his late father, we'd see them, and so I don't know them well, but I know them. When you practice for 3 days with an opponent, you get a chance to meet a lot of the different personalities and people involved in the building. They've got really good draft capital.
Couple good young players.
They're in a division that you can at least look at and say, all right, Indy, Tennessee, Jacksonville is nothing. But you can at least, all right, how do we? So I think there's growth potential immediately there from their two or three wins that they had this year. I know Nick a little bit, Caserio, because, again, when he was in New England, we had a lot of practices with their team. So each team would be just like we're having that discussion. There'd be pros and that's the significance, though, of the upcoming week or two, of meeting some of these individuals, asking some questions, maybe some difficult questions, and trying to get answers so that we're not having difficult questions when you've already taken the job.
All right, that was Sean Payton about the Texans' job. Basically said the AFC South sucked, by the way. But let's react to what he had to say. Some interesting things there. Let's go on record of how we would rank our coaching list right now from most desired to least desired. 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes. Wheel. Fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Sean Payton, just moments ago, we played the soundbite. Basically said the AFC South sucked. He kind of had to catch himself there a little bit. It's like, yeah, it's a division with the Colts and the Titans and the Jags. We feel like there could be an immediate improvement there. Kind of had to spin the way that came out. Two things that really jumped out to me. Now, you could throw the draft capital in there as well, which you made a good point during the break. I won't describe the setting. But during the break in which you talked about the draft capital would be severely damaged if you all of a sudden had to trade. For Sean Payton, I think the conversation everybody's had is the 12th pick. I'm not in favor of trading any compensation for Sean Payton, which would take me out of the Sean Payton conversation. The two things that stuck out to me, though, is Sean Payton, who is the biggest name currently in the coaching carousel and the biggest name that the Texans have requested an interview with, he said he's comfortable with ownership. He said he didn't know him all that well, but he flat out said he's comfortable with ownership. And he also said he was comfortable with Nick Caserio because there's been a lot of talk, that if Sean Payton came in, that's like what Nick Caserio was referring to, and that he would either like step down or be a very diminished piece of the Houston Texans front office, which it would take some arranging. But I don't think that with what Sean Payton just said, that all of a sudden they're firing Nick Caserio. It sounds like he's comfortable with Cal, and it sounds like he's comfortable with Nick.
He's comfortable with Nick is the way that I would put it. Because the second that Nick steps out of line, oh, congratulations, you're shown the door immediately.
Absolutely.
That's the thing. So the other thing is, a guy like Sean Payton can go ahead and sell to the franchise. Look at what you've done since being established in 2002. You made a handful of playoff appearances. You've never been to an AFC championship game. You wasted a guy in Deshaun Watson. You wasted a guy in J.J. Watt. You traded away DeAndre Hopkins. You wasted an Andre Johnson career. I don't waste careers. I elevate careers. So I am going to have full say on this organization, where he may not get that with the Bidwell family in Arizona. He may not get that with the NFC South team in Carolina. David Tepper is the most aggressive owner in the NFL. He bought an MLS team and within the first year fired the head coach because he didn't get along with him. Like, that's the type of guy you're dealing with. So I look at a team like Houston. You are a dumpster fire. You are absolutely dog crap. You've won 7 games in the last 2 years. You've decimated careers throughout your entire time. I've only elevated careers. I brought back Drew Brees. I made Drew Brees with who he was. I fixed a lot of defensive players. Malcolm Jenkins is one of the more underappreciated names of who he developed into an all-pro type player. So if I'm a guy like the Houston Texans, I'm like, okay, I have to listen to Sean Payton because Sean Payton's not coming here if he does not have full final say in everything. And good old little boy Nick Caserio can be a great lapdog. The second that he tucks out of line, he's shown the pound door. He's shown to the pound. Like, that's the way it is. And he has a plethora of names. Jeff Ireland probably being the biggest one, who would come in, he'd be the next GM, and basically Sean Payton would be running the show on all different phases.
Yeah, I think Caserio would be willing to take a step back, though. I'm not sure that Caserio, but I think he'd be willing to. And I'm not sure, like, because he could just quit. I mean, he could resign like James Click did, right? James Click could have signed an extension with the Astros. Was it a low ball? Was it insulting? He thought so. But he could have done it. He could have had another year with a 100-win team that's a World Series contender and made more money than he's going to make this year. Kind of the similar thing with Nick Caserio. You're taking a step back. You might feel like you're being, you know, neutered a little bit. But he also had that in Belichick, you know? Like,
yeah.
he's not unfamiliar with working with a coach who pretty much has total power and total authority. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we want Sean Payton. 1185, Sean Payton is a very good coach. He didn't quit on New Orleans because he thought they wouldn't be relative. I think he did quit on them. He's a great quarterback coach. Look what he did with Winston and, of course, Drew Brees, whom I think compares to Bryce Young. Trading for the 12th pick isn't a done deal. That's a deal breaker for me, quite honestly. Also on the text line, 0830, is Sean Payton realistic or will the Texans be left empty-handed? I think it's realistic. I think it's in play that the Texans could bring in Sean Payton and give up the draft capital. I very much think it's in play.
I just don't give up the first-round picks.
I wouldn't either, but do you think it's in play? Do you think the Texans are capable of doing it?
Yeah, you have 2 third-round picks. If you're able to give up 2 third-round picks...
That's not realistic.
If you're able to give up a 2024 first-round pick...
Cleveland's first,
if you give up Cleveland's first-round pick next year, and then you give up one of your third-round picks this year, I like the move. I think that's fair. Because if I still need to be able to build my franchise right now in the moment, I'm not going to get better by getting Sean Payton in here. And Sean's talking about, oh, we have great draft capital. They have great draft capital.
Yep.
You don't have great draft capital if you move off the number 12 pick. That is a key component to your offense, to your defense, to fixing your team. You are nowhere near close to being even relevant, even if you add in a quarterback. A quarterback on this roster takes you from a 3-win team to a 5-win team. You need as much draft capital as possible, but you do have the extra third, so go ahead and trade that. And if you have to move a first-round pick, move it in 2024. Part of the reason why I feel like that the Arizona Cardinals have a little bit of a better ploy is all they have is pick number 3. That's all they have available right now. So if they say, we want Sean Payton, we'll give up whatever it takes for Sean Payton, Houston's not giving up number 2.
I don't think that the Saints are going to have as much say on where Payton goes, though. Like, if Payton goes to New Orleans and says that I want to go to the Houston Texans, the Saints have no choice but to do business with the Texans.
Right.
Like, they're not going to sit back and be... It's not where they're trading a player and they're trading the player to the highest bidder. It's going to be, okay, this is what it's going to take for us to trade Payton. Let's just make the assumption it's a first and a third. And it's not even going to really matter where the first is and when the first is. Because, like, Denver doesn't have a... They have San Francisco's first.
They got Miami's... San Francisco's first because of the Bradley
right.
Chubb deal.
Yeah,
yeah, which so, is like 23 now or whatever it is.
Well, I think it depends on the playoffs, doesn't it?
Yeah, but they lost Miami. So, San Francisco.
No, it's San Francisco's
right.
pick.
You're right. So San Francisco still has to go ahead and lose.
Yeah, it's San Francisco's pick. So, like, I don't think it really matters a whole lot where the pick is because the Saints aren't saying, we're going to trade Sean Payton to one of these four teams and we're going to trade him to the highest bidder is. Sean Payton's going to go to the Saints and say, okay, I'm picking Team X. And then they're going to go get their first and potential third rounder. So I think it's possible that you could trade Cleveland's first next year and then the third rounder for Payton. I think that that is in play. I still wouldn't do it, but I do think that the Texans would consider it. I think that the Texans do look at Sean Payton and Cal McNair trying to bring like a level of take this team serious around the NFL. I think the Texans would do something like that, potentially. I think very much it's in play that the Texans would go out and make the move. Would I do it? No. Do I think Cal could? Absolutely.
But it goes back to the whole Deshaun Watson thing. As soon as Watson said, I am going to Cleveland, I am only going to play for Cleveland, at that point it came down to money and financials and draft capital, how it was done. But Nick Caserio was bought in. It has to be the Cleveland Browns. If I want to get rid of this guy, I have to get some value in return, but this is the only team that's going to come out there. It's the same thing. If Sean Payton says, this is the place I have the most opportunity to win. It's the place I have the most opportunity to have the most control. And it's the place to where I can build a franchise the way that I see fit. They have to do business with Houston or they're not doing business. They don't have a first-round pick in this year's draft because they moved up to go get Trevor Penning last year. And they have holes everywhere on the roster. So I still view it as, I understand where you're coming from. I agree with you. I do not go ahead and bring in Sean Payton. I think there's other names out there that could be beneficial. You could build a long-standing culture. I think they got to go with a more youthful approach to be able to make this a more exciting city as well. But If the only team out there is Sean Payton versus the likes of the Houston Texans, then they're going to get the deal done. And for Cal McNair slash Nick Caserio, it's beneficial because they can now play hardball. They can say, we're not giving up any of the first-round picks this year. The most we're willing to give up next year is the likes of probably Cleveland's, because Cleveland is going to be better with Deshaun Watson a full offseason in the system. And we still get our draft capital for this year to be able to build our team and our image.
It's still going
to
cost you first, though.
Oh, like, it has to.
You might be able to be selective on when the first is, but it's still going to cost you a first for Sean Payton, and that's at least a first for Sean Payton, which is a steep price to pay. I'm not doing it if I can get some of the top candidates on my list. Now, there does become a point where I'm starting to consider it if you get far enough on your list. Like, if I'm ranking my coaching list right now, I'll get yours in a second, Cole. I want Benny Johnson. He's at the top of the list. D'Amico Ryan's a second for me. Then it's Shane Steichen, Mike Kafka, and then Sean Payton. If I strike out on all four of those guys, I consider your trade proposal of next year's first and a future third for Sean Payton, because I don't want Jonathan Gannon. I don't want Averro from Denver, and I don't want Thomas Brown. So if I swing and miss on my top four guys, Benny Johnson, D'Amico Ryan, Shane Steichen, Mike Kafka, at that point I would be a little bit more accepting of the idea of trading draft capital for Sean Payton, which is a little bit of a different stance than I had last week.
So we're a little bit different, but we also have kind of the same five. Number one for me is Ben Johnson. Immediately want him on the roster. Number two for me is Mike Kafka, only because I do look at the style of quarterbacks that he's worked with, and he's also played the position. That's beneficial, in my opinion, more so than anything else out there. Number three is D'Amico Ryans. And the reason D'Amico Ryans is at number three, he's not coming to Houston. I'm sorry, Texans fans. You can go ahead and gripe and mope and complain and cry. He's not coming to Houston. He would have already been here in the process last season if he wanted to come to Houston, but he doesn't. Next would be Sean Payton, and next would be Jonathan Gannon for me. I just look at Shane Steichen. I looked at why he was let go by the Los Angeles Chargers. I see what you're seeing from him with Jalen Hurts.
Well, the Chargers thing was, that was a new staff.
But still, there should have been more options out there for him as an offensive coordinator. And I do think that he still is a good option for you, but he would come in for me right after Sean Payton's, and he would come in for me after Jonathan Gannon.
So you would trade for Payton before you hire Steichen?
Yes, I would.
So you have three guys ahead of Payton.
Yeah,
Benny Johnson,
Mike Kafka, D'Amico Ryan.
So you're entertaining a trade for Payton after those guys. For me, it's four. Same ones, but I'm adding Mike Kafka to it. What about you, Houston? 713-780-ESPN. At what point is Sean Payton on your radar for future first? 713-780-3776. And I got to be a little bit honest with you, Cole. I'm starting to get a little worried about this coaching search. I'm starting to get pessimistic. I had the weekend to think about it, and I'm starting to see some things I don't love. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Sean Payton on the herd. We played the soundbite a little bit earlier. Says that, look, he'd be interested in the Texans. Likes the draft capital. I'm paraphrasing, but he said the AFC South sucked. He said he's comfortable with Cal McNair. He said he's comfortable with Nick Caserio. He also told the herd, I'm seeing some tweets on this, about the compensation of what it would take to acquire his services. He's openly talking about what it's going to take for other teams to acquire him.
I love the fact
hilarious.
That Fox is also just like, you know what? Let's just let him do it at this point. You know what? Let's just get him out of here. We don't need him anymore.
It's also really interesting to have a TV personality who's very much in the mix in the coaching carousel. It's fascinating. Like Sean Payton's making the rounds at his own network saying, yeah, this is what it's going to take to acquire me. These are the teams that I'm interested in. Meanwhile, these other coaches are preparing for either games or interviews. Like D'Amico's preparing for a game. Kafka preparing for a game. The Philadelphia coordinator's preparing for a game. You have Benny Johnson, who's preparing for the interviews around the NFL. Sean Payton just making the rounds on television. It's hilarious. But he was asked about what it's going to take to acquire his services, and he told Colin Cowherd a mid to late first round draft pick. So mid would be 12th, like that's in the mid conversation, although it's a little bit high. Or the Cleveland 2024 pick, I think, would be something that's mid to late. I think if the Texans had their druthers and they could pick, between the next four first-round draft picks they have, 2, 12, their own next year, Cleveland's own next year, I think they would want to give up Cleveland's first more than any of the others.
They would have to give up Cleveland's next year, because here's the thing. If you expect Deshaun Watson to be the quarterback that he was, even partially in Houston, next season with a full offseason in Kevin Stefanski's offense, when they go out and they spend money in free agency on bringing in another wide receiver, when they go out and they maybe add in a tight end, when they go out and they fix the defense, this is probably a 10-win team. Maybe it's an 11-win team. 11 wins is anywhere between picks 18 through 24. So that's a pick to where it's like the mid-round pick. That, to me, is more so it. You're not going to get a number 12 overall pick again. So in my opinion, if you can get rid of the pick next season, expecting that Watson's going to improve, expecting that Cleveland's going to rebound, and expecting that Cleveland is going to have better numbers, then that's a better selection for you as Houston, because you're still going to be a dumpster fire next year. You can go ahead and bring in Bryce Young. You can go ahead and bring in maybe a Tyree Wilson with pick number 12. You can draft Darnell Washington. You can make some swab moves in free agency. You're still going to be a 6-win team at the most next season. So it's not as if you giving up your first-round pick next year benefits you in the slightest in New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel a little bit more open to the idea of Sean Payton. But for me, it's going to require one of the first four guys saying no: Benny Johnson, D'Amico Ryan, Shane Steichen, Mike Kafka. And then I think you have to throw in the caveat, too, the 2024 Cleveland pick. I told you going into this segment, I'm starting to get a little more worried about this search, starting to get a little pessimistic. Maybe it's just a few days that I had to spend without talking about it every single day. But if you look around, like the candidates that I like, Benny Johnson. We're hearing reports that Benny Johnson is linked to Carolina. He's from South Carolina. He went to high school in the Carolinas. He went to college at North Carolina. So I feel pessimistic that the Texans aren't landing my top target, because it looks like everything is trending towards him getting the Carolina Panther job. Does Dave Tepper, does he go after him too because he's from the Carolinas? So I start to get a little hesitant there. The D'Amico Ryan's part of this whole equation too, and Kyle Shanahan just said at his press conference that D'Amico Ryan's going to interview with the Texans on Friday. So that's good news. But also, like, everything we've heard from D'Amico Ryan's, and that first Aaron Wilson report said that he was not interested in the Houston Texans job. We've seen some things saying that he had to, like, really contemplate the idea of interviewing with the Texans. There's a little bit of hesitation. Usually when you're contemplating and you're hesitating to interview for a certain job, you probably don't want that job a whole lot. So D'Amico, there's some fears there that I have that he's not even all that interested in this job. If he's having to contemplate and he's hesitating to talk about it. Mentioned the Benny Johnson Carolina Avenue. Also, Mike Kafka. He's not interviewing this week. I don't know if that takes him off the table for the Texans. I would argue it does not, but I'd rather him interview this week than not interview this week and then steal the price tag for Sean Payton. So there's some trends that I'm starting to have some fears about whenever I look at this coaching search, where last week it was like, okay, all of these guys on this list, I'd be comfortable with them for the most part. I have my favorites, Ben Johnson, D'Amico Ryans. But the more you start to hear some things, you start to dig in on some things, I'm starting to have some fears.
Jeremy, I know that I'm fake Joel today, but I am going to be the one that brings the ray of sunshine to you.
That's usually his role.
I'm going to bring the cloud. I'm going to ease up the clouds. I'm going to bring out the rainbow. The Texans are in a good spot because they have multiple candidates that they like. They have multiple candidates that like them. There also is the factor that they're going to have time based off who they really are interested in. So the top name right now that everyone seems to be linked to is Jonathan Gannon. Jonathan Gannon, which we agree, probably the worst of the selections as of today.
I would be disappointed if they hired Gannon.
That still feels like the top name.
So I'd be disappointed with that.
But if Philadelphia continues to win, you'll be able to interview every single person besides Jonathan Gannon, to where eventually you'll dictate, Jonathan Gannon's our guy. We're going to go roll all in with him. We like his staff. We like what he's going to bring with us. We like what he brings to the table. But if you don't like that, the good news is a guy like Mike Kafka, Kafka's going to get interviewed by two teams, in my opinion. It's going to be Indianapolis and it's going to be Houston. One of those two teams is going to either get Mike Kafka or he's going to take his name out of the conversation altogether. They're not beating Philadelphia next week. As much as I like what I've seen from Daniel Jones, as much as I like what I've seen from the likes of New York, how that come from behind little underdog story is great. It doesn't work when you play against the Giants in the NFL. And that's where you are right now if you are the New York Giants. You're facing off against a giant team. I also think that when you look at Ben Johnson, I hate to be the bearer of bad news for you on this one, not only is he linked to Carolina, Will Levis linked to Carolina as well. So that may be the combination.
He's not going to get to Carolina.
That may be the combination of where you're like, son of a gun.
I'd rather that happen in Carolina than Indy.
But no, I agree. But
Carolina would immediately be my NFC team.
But again, if that happens, and everything else like you just said, Sean Payton's the guy, and Sean Payton wants to come to Houston. And if you can give up just that first-round pick in next year's draft, okay, So now he's running the team. He is a proven winner. He does have a track record of developing quarterbacks. He does have a track record of getting people to come play for him. And he is well respected in the NFL, which is huge because it allows you to build the staff the way that you see fit. Who is the number one name that is going to be interested as the defensive coordinator? Vic Fangio, one of the best defensive minds in the sport. Sometimes you can be a great coordinator and a bad head coach. Vic Fangio is a great defensive coordinator. So if you bring him into the building, look at that. You gave up a first-round pick, but look at what you brought into the table instead of it. I actually think the Texans are in a very good spot right now. I'm not going to go ahead and rain on your parade. I know that you want to be pessimistic today, but
no,
I'm
it's not raining on my parade.
I'm going to be smiling. I'm going to be very happy. I like where the Texans are at this point because at the end of the day, they'll be able to fully navigate through the coaching search and figure out exactly what they like and exactly what they hate about the coaching staff and the options that they have on the table.
If they end up with Jonathan Gannon, I'm going to be really disappointed. I'll be very disappointed if they end up with Jonathan Gannon because I have different tiers where it takes off. Like, there is a drop-off between the tiers in terms of my excitement level for who the Texans hire. I have Tier 1. Tier 1 is a name by himself. It's Benny Johnson.
Yeah.
If you don't hire Benny Johnson, there's a small drop-off to DeMeco Ryans. If it's not DeMeco Ryans, there's a pretty significant drop-off to Shane Steichen and Mike Kafka. If it's not one of those guys, it's an even more significant drop-off to Sean Payton. And if it's not any of those guys, I'm going to be upset and disappointed with who the Houston Texans hired as their head coach. If it's Gannon, Vero, Thomas Brown, that's a failure. They missed on the head coach.
Yeah. I guess.
If you want to be like, you know, rainbows and sunshine but, in a blanker's role that doesn't exist where you're like trying to, you know, coddle me and like bring up my spirits and lift me up.
It's okay. Jeremy.
You tell me? Can you tell me that it's going to be Benny, DeMeco, Steichen, Kafka, or Payton?
I can tell you it's going to be one of those five.
So not Gannon.
No, I don't think I think that if Gannon is the hire, Gannon's the hire because of that. Just shows you that it's Nick Caserio. That just shows that the organization believes that. The organization thinks that's the way it is. But I personally believe that the three names you're going to look at the end of the day is going to be either Steichen. It's going to be Gannon. I mean, it's going to be Kafka. Or it's going to be Ben Johnson. Those are the three that I think ultimately end up getting the job.
I'd be okay with that. Now, obviously, Ben Johnson more than the others.
Now, what I will say is if you get the right staff around Sean Payton, all you give up is that 2024 first-round pick from the Cleveland Browns, that also is a win, in my opinion. Because if you're still keeping all your draft capital for this year, and you're bringing in a great coaching staff with them, because people will follow people. Look at what's going on right now in Colorado with the likes of Deion Sanders. You don't see coaching staffs leave head coaching positions to become offensive coordinators. You don't see a defensive analyst leave as the right-hand man of Nick Saban to become your defensive coordinator if you don't believe in the culture that the head coach is setting. So to be able to get a great coaching staff underneath Sean Payton, something that Sean Payton has always had, is already a huge win in your pocket, and that may be worth a first-round pick in general.
I understand that, and I feel a lot better about it being Cleveland's 2024 pick, the number 12.
It has to be Cleveland's 2024
That brings it into
pick.
The table. That brings it to where I would have a level of excitement for Sean Payton. It'd still be the last of the five candidates I would have excitement for, and anything below Sean Payton, I lose all excitement altogether. And maybe I'm operating, too, from a sense of I feel like Benny Johnson, I feel like that ship has sailed. I really do. I don't feel like Benny Johnson's chances of being the Texans head coach are very high on a couple of fronts. I feel like the Texans feel and prioritize some of the other coaches more than they do Benny Johnson. Don't love that. But I also feel like Benny Johnson prioritizes the Carolina job more than the Texans job right now.
Well, why wouldn't he? I mean, it's closer to home.
That makes me sad.
And at the same time, also, David Tepper is a very well-respected owner, even though he is a guy that literally gets rid of coaches like it's secondhand fiddle.
Very respected program director as well.
But at the same time, think about it for a minute. Like, what he's been able to do and how much free range he'll give a guy like Benny Johnson may be a little bit different. Because if Scott Fitterer is also on the hot seat, and Scott Fitterer also is not going to be viewed as the long-term GM if that's not the case, but ownership will matter in that front. Plus, you always want to be closer to home. I mean, I get that. People always want to be closer to where their home is, to where the family can come see them, where the grandkids can be around the grandparents. They can go ahead and leave for the weekend. They can have some fun with that. I understand all that. But at the same time, if Benny Johnson does think that Houston offers him a better opportunity when it comes to draft capital and when it comes to an opportunity to build a team in his image, why wouldn't he consider it if it really comes down to ownership and both of which have had incompetencies, even though I do think that David Tepper, with his aggressive style, does benefit him a little bit more.
Well, you're not doing anything to lift me up. You're just driving me further into this Benny Johnson depression that he's going to leave me at the altar and go to another city.
Right, but I'm lifting you up because if you're saying that the Texans don't have options in the head coaching search, if you put
that's not what I'm saying.
No, but
I'm saying all these options, I feel like they're pointing in the other direction.
But if you put all your
trending in the other direction,
if you put all your eggs in one basket,
I gave you four.
Right, but you didn't even mention it. I literally just said Betty Johnson's not going to be here, and maybe maybe you get Kafka, maybe you get Steichton, maybe you do get Sean Payton. So those are the other three that potentially are in your basket. So if you're going to go ahead and put
Dampers.
Everything, if you're going to put everything in the Benny Johnson basket, I don't know what to tell you. You
I just like everything.
You just like being sad and miserable. That's just your life.
Everything. I said Benny Johnson's at the top, and then I lose a little bit of appeal every single tier that you go down.
But let me ask you, if Benny Johnson can't build a staff, and you just like Benny Johnson, but Sean Payton, or you can go ahead and say Mike Kafka can build a staff, are you beneficial in saying that that's massive win?
That's quite a reach if you're not expecting the genius of Benny Johnson to build a staff.
I expect that Benny Johnson can build a staff, but I think that Sean Payton can build a better one.
Brandon Cooks has talked about how he doesn't want to be part of a rebuild. He hasn't said that he doesn't want to be a Texan. He says that he doesn't want to be part of a rebuild. Do you think that there's any of these coaches that could convince Brandon Cooks to stick around? Because I don't think that it makes sense to trade Brandon Cooks for the level of player that he is. I know we don't like Brandon Cooks a whole lot in the city right now. Trading him for a six-rounder sounds counterintuitive to me. I like the idea of keeping Brandon Cooks, especially if you're going with a rookie quarterback, to give him an extra weapon that's still pretty good in the NFL. Like, he doesn't want to be part of a rebuild. But if it's like a legitimate head coach, Sean Payton, and then you're willing to spend some money and it looks like the Texans can be somewhat competitive, do you think he can talk Brandon Cooks into sticking around?
I think it has to be Sean Payton or bust.
I think
that's,
so, too.
That's the only way I could say it. I don't think that a guy like Benny Johnson is going to get him to stay. I don't think Mike Kafka would get him to stay. I don't think anybody would really get him to stay at this point. And I don't think that he wants to be the guy who is the saving grace for a rookie quarterback. I think that if it's the right coach in the building, maybe that does help and that benefits him. And he can sell him on what the future entails and how I know what it takes to get a team from being sub-500 to a winner in 2 years.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. How much of the dead cap space will Houston have to eat even to get a valuable pick in return for a guy like Brandon Cooks? Because Brandon Cooks is owed $18.3 million next season, and that's going to be something beneficial when it comes to draft salary. I mean, one of the main reasons why Dallas didn't walk away with anything higher than a fifth-round pick for Amari Cooper was they were not willing to eat any of the contracts. Yeah. So that's another big deal. If you can go ahead and get a third-round pick for Brandon Cooks and maybe eat $6 million, I consider that a win. But if you only are going to get a six-round pick, go get a coach that maybe believes in it.
Yeah, if I'm not getting a third rounder for Brandon Cooks, I'm keeping Brandon Cooks.
Why wouldn't you?
That's the minimum for me. If I get a third rounder, takes like pay for that third rounder a little bit, okay, cool, I can listen to that. But anything worse than that, I'm just keeping Brandon Cooks playing hardball.
You're seventh in salary cap space right now. You can benefit eating $6 million to get a third round pick. And then that's three third round picks for you that you can build your team off of.
713-780-ESPN, Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. If it's Texans related, like 1440 wants us to talk about, you can ask us whatever Texans-related question you want. NFL question, Cole's dating life, which is not existent these days. 713-780-ESPN and Ask Us Anything Mailbag Monday. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.